The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 17th of July. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my co-host, the absolutely gorgeous...
Bird on a Bike.
Hello, Miss on a Bike.
You all right?
How are you doing?
Are you from north today?
Am I from what?
North.
North?
Up north.
Up
you
north.
Went, hey.
Did I?
Oh, you did.
You're right. Okay. No, I'm not from up north, am I?
No.
Not even from North London, am I?
I don't know. Where are you from?
West London.
Huh. How would I know?
Fulham. Huh?
How would I know?
Accent?
Again, I don't really...
Yeah, but you're a pirate. You wouldn't know, would you?
I'm going home to pirate land soon.
Are you?
Can you imagine how it's going to go?
Yeah. They're going to go, you don't have to talk funny, Bert, since
well,
you left.
It's really interesting you say that, because we're going to Cornwall on holiday and...
Where are you going?
Newquay.
Are you?
Yeah,
Newquay. Bit of Newquay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, children and everything, really.
Yeah.
And they don't talk like that.
Fistral Beach.
We're not on Fistral Beach, we're on Great Western Beach, so it's right. Just around the corner.
Yeah, okay.
But we've picked the one weekend. You know when you go, yeah, that would be fitting in.
Mm.
And do a couple of races, take the bikes, kids will all be happy, we can surf and da da da. And it happens to be the weekend that is the biggest weekend in Cornwall ever of the year, which is Boardmasters.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
So we're going.
It's going to be rammed. Yeah.
Exactly. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
So great. The only weekend.
Nice
but
one.
Stephen's got no idea what Cornwall's like. He just thinks, you can get everywhere in half an hour. I'm like, it's Cornwall.
It's Cornwall. No, this time of year, it'll be traffic jam. Sorry.
He said it'll be midweek. It'll be fine. Exactly. My face, exactly.
Do you know, I had a house in Cornwall for 14 years. And
where?
In Rock.
I love Rock.
Yeah.
Damer Bay is just
absolutely.
The best.
Absolutely. Yeah. Polzeth and Damer Bay. We lived in a little hamlet called Tredrizzick, just on the outskirts of Rock.
Yeah.
And we were there 14 years, and we never went in the summer after a while because
it's
just
horrific.
You just couldn't move.
Yeah.
I drove down from Maidstone once, and it took me 9.5 hours to get there. Yeah.
It's so funny because he keeps looking at it on Google and he says, it's not that far.
Yeah.
I said, I'm telling you, whatever happens, as soon as you get to Plymouth, it could take an hour and a half. It could take 5 hours. Who knows?
The trouble is once you're off the motorway network, there's no, even the A31 and all the rest of it through Bodmin and have you, it's just single lane. And, you only need roadworks on there or a tractor and you're finished.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's lovely once you get there. It's a great place. I love it.
And I don't even care if it's going to be raining or not because we're just being wetsuits, surfing. So it doesn't really matter. It's really cool.
My boys were both surfers and we used to go in the winter. Because summer's useless for surfing.
I agree.
It's just like a mill pond. But Jamie, my eldest, I remember him surfing. I can't remember whether it was Polzeth or Chapel Porth, one of them, in November in a snowstorm at night. Okay, with a miner's lamp on the top of his head.
And Polzeth is just stunning.
It's gorgeous,
isn't it?
And Damer Bay, yeah.
And of course, in Damer Bay, you've got Rock, and then you've got John Betjeman's grave, haven't you?
Yeah, it's exactly.
This little church in the middle of but nowhere.
Yeah, buried in a sand dune.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah,
absolutely.
Anyway.
Oh, there you go. When are you going?
We're going, I think, the 1st or 2nd of August.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah,
well,
sorry.
Have fun.
You won't miss me because I'm not on that week.
Okay. Well, I will miss you. Of course I'll miss you, Bert.
Get on with you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Talking about cycling, have you ever done the Camel Trail?
No.
Oh, you ought to try that.
When did I talk about cycling?
Well, you did. You said you were talking...
You were taking the bikes. No.
You've never done the Camel Trail?
No.
Okay. That's worth it. It's good fun.
Isn't that on a camel?
No. For those of us without bikes, you hire a bike, and it's the old railway line. And it goes all the way from Bodmin to Padstow, but we normally join it at Weybridge. And you can hire a bike anywhere along the line. It's about 8 miles. And
do you stop in the Pitty Me? Do you know the Pitty Me?
I used to live opposite the Pitty Me.
No, you never.
Mm-hmm.
They do the best crab sandwiches I've ever had in my life. I'm serious.
You don't say.
They do.
You don't say.
You really lived?
I lived smack opposite the Pitty Me.
What? How many years have I known you?
You didn't know I was a temporary pirate.
No. They must have loved you down there.
Yeah.
But they don't speak like me, so Plymouth is a different accent to Cornwall.
Yeah, see, according to the Cornish, I'm a grockle.
You are a grockle.
Yeah. Absolutely. There you go. Anyway, have fun. Good. We got a packed show for you. And we've got some great guests that we're going to talk to. We've got a guest joining us on the phone, and we've got a fabulous guest in the studio, so we've got lots to talk about. But, of course, you can get in touch with us, and we'd love to hear from you, the people out there. And you can get in touch with us in all the normal ways. You can, in fact, call me on 01233 220035. That's Ashford, 01233 220035. You can email me at bunker@kentbusinessradio.co.uk. But by far and away, the easiest way to interact with us live on air is to tweet me. Use the hashtag BBunker, and we will read your tweet out.
It's a bit slow today, isn't it, on the tweets?
Well, funny enough, this morning I was thinking, blimey, that's slow this morning. I've only had 5 or 6 or 10 tweets.
A million,
obviously. I leave off the zeros these days because it gets too onerous. And then all of a sudden, I just said to Bird, with about 5 minutes to go on air, we had a massive flurry of tweets suddenly come in. So, but keep them coming. We might even read some of them out.
Well, because we like to communicate, and it seems to be that it's really nice we can get conversation going.
Yeah, it's great, and we love to hear from you. So if you're up to anything, if you're doing anything, if you're going anywhere, if you just want to say hello, drop us a tweet. We're always happy to hear from you, and we love to hear from our listener. Yes. Do we not?
We love it.
Unless he's on holiday at the moment.
Yeah, we don't want to hear from him.
He might be on holiday, and then we've got no listeners at all.
No. Yeah. Where are you going anyway?
Don't even go there.
Let's go there.
Yeah, we miss the summer. Funnily enough, we were talking about going to Cornwall.
One of us?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, we never got our act together about it. So it looks like we're going to wait until October.
And go where?
Disney. Florida.
There's nothing more to say.
Have you been?
No, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I
love it. See? My daughter's 20 and she still would love to go, even now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have never been to Disney.
Have you not?
Oh, like, my God, Ben, it's amazing.
My partner, my girlfriend, is pestering me the whole time. I've been to Paris, but never to Florida.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Go. Florida's much better than Paris because there's so much more there.
Yeah.
Now, funnily enough, I hate rides. I won't go on a single ride. I hate rides, and I won't go on a single ride. But
why go to Disney?
Because there's thousands of things to do.
There's loads
of things to do, and it's not just Disney. Well, you've got loads of Disney parks. You've got Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach and all of that kind of stuff, which is really great. And then you got MGM and SeaWorld, and it's just loads of stuff.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's just loads of stuff to do.
It's really funny, isn't it? When you go and travel these things, when I was a sister years and years ago, a nurse, I was stood there in this queue, you know, busy, it's massive. Disney's busy. We're in the kingdom. Mm. And we're stood there, and the kids are waiting in the queue, and I hear, "Sister, what are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Oh my God." It's one of them big consultants from the hospital, you know. The likelihood of one meeting there, of two in that position. So it always happens, doesn't it?
Mm.
Very funny stories.
The last time, was it last time? I've been there 3 or 4 times, or maybe more. I can't remember if it was last time. Well, one time we hired a house we were in, and the next door neighbour was one of the keepers from... he was actually at SeaWorld, but he actually looked after the primates, and I didn't even know they had primates at SeaWorld, but apparently they did. They got a small zoo there. And he had a baby orangutan staying at home with him because she'd been unwell. It was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. He sat out on the front lawn with his baby orangutan, and my kids were going, you know, trying to entice it with bits of banana. So it was hilarious. We got some fantastically funny video of it. It's really funny.
And, of course, talking of children, you're going away today, aren't you, with your children? Little boy.
One of my children.
With your little baby.
With my baby child, who's 23 today. So happy birthday, Stu.
And he's organised a beautiful meal for you, isn't he?
Well, apparently, well, he booked a restaurant that I'm paying for, in somewhere really stupidly expensive in the middle of London. Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I'm going up later today to meet Stu, and we're going out for something to eat, which will be lovely. I haven't seen him for a couple of weeks. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that'll be
excellent.
Nice. Yeah, good.
Nice.
And my grandson came to visit at the weekend, and we watched the World Cup final together.
Nice.
Yeah, because, of course, he was supporting France.
Of course.
Yeah, as he would. Yeah. Nice. So there you go. Yeah, all happening.
All going down.
Do you know what we're going to do?
No.
We're going to play a track, and then we're going to talk to Kevin Byrne from Checker Trade.
He's great. I love him.
Yeah, I've heard that he's a really good speaker.
He's a great speaker.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll get him on the phone once we play this track. Guess a cheesy tunage. Guess what I picked?
Who's it for?
Kevin.
Bob the Builder.
No, I wasn't that cheesy.
That would have been a good guess, though.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah.
Paint it black.
Paint it black. Yeah, exactly.
I see a painted into black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black. This thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun, my love will laugh with me before the morning comes. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore, I want them to turn black.
Rift Accounting, your small business bodyguard. Riftaccounting.com.
The Networkers Networking Event, a full-day event helping business owners to understand how to network more effectively and efficiently. Three great speakers, eight of the best networking, masterminding and business support groups in Kent, and 50-plus great business owners to meet, network with and connect with. Join us at the Networkers Networking Event. It's an event not to be missed. Phoenix Analysts Limited. Business consultants commissioning, procurement and quality assurance services. Helping you to get the most out of your business. Check our website for more details. PhoenixAnalystsLimited.com.
Grow your business.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Want more business in Kent? Get 12 months membership for the price of 10 when you join our supplymybusiness.co.uk Kent Business Community today.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Hi, welcome back. Well, that's a bit of a shame. Kevin's not answering his phone. Sorry about that.
Huh.
Yeah, there you go. I have sent him a message, but Don't
maybe
know.
Maybe we'll catch him in a minute. He's a interesting guy, how he actually came about it all.
Mm.
Really, really great speaker. Very humble.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking forward to speaking to him, but as I say, he's not answering his phone at the moment, so I've texted him, but I've not had a reply. Mm. So we shall see.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What do you want to talk about now?
Well, I'll tell you what. Mm. I had a couple of meetings yesterday, and they were meetings as in how could I support somebody. And what came up is that the talk was, I really want to do this. This is what I'm doing. I really like it, but this is what I really want to do.
Mm.
But nobody's ever going to buy that. Mm. Nobody's ever going to pay that prices.
Mm.
So their language was limiting before they even began.
Yeah.
Right. Say that again. I wasn't listening. I was looking at my phone.
Did you see what he just did then to me?
I was looking at my phone. I thought my phone had gone off. So, but go on.
So what I'm saying to you is I had a couple of meetings yesterday.
Mm.
And the limiting language that came out was, this is what I'm doing. I really like it, but this is really what I want to do. This is absolutely all in, but it's going to cost a lot for me to produce and nobody will pay these prices. There's not a market for it.
Right. Okay.
I think just from my perspective with that, it's all about the language is so important to how people perceive on what you're doing. So that it is literally, you could sell absolutely anything as long as your positivity is there and that you believe in it and enough. And that's something that I've seen over and over again with new startups, especially in Kent at the moment. I think there's some fantastic startups that are doing the impossible in a sense, is that something people wouldn't typically buy.
Mm.
But it's about education. And yes, you might struggle for the first 6 months in educating the people. But I think once you get to that point where you've built your brand in quotation marks enough that people understand what it is and see why you're passionate about it, people will start to buy in no matter what it is, I think.
Regardless of price point?
I actually think it is regardless of price point.
Interesting.
Because you create your own market, and if nobody else is doing it, then price point shouldn't be an issue. It's just the services that you provide and the perception of what you do has to be at that level as well. So, you know, if you're charging that price, then you have to give a reason. But if you're talking negatively about it, then people will not buy into that reason in the first place.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was really shocked, actually. It came out, I was like, well, do we know this? Have you tested it? Have you actually tried it? You know, how much is it going to cost? Or are you literally sort of going to just put your finger up in the air and wait for the wind to blow and then, oh, let's charge it at that? It's a really interesting concept.
Yeah, and I think with that as well, just the price point side, you know, working from just experience as well, is that people will buy anything depending on price, but it's what you give for that price. So you can sell anything. So there's people who provide, let's just say, recruitment services as an example. Some charge more and some charge less. But, you know, if you're paying for better personnel and you're paying for that extra added value, then why can't you replicate that in any industry and in any sector?
And also value is personal to the person.
Exactly.
It isn't necessarily what that product is.
Yeah, and people need to stop worrying about the 100% of people and start worrying about the 10% that actually care about your business. Because that's where you'll find the sweet spot, and they're the people who are willing to pay that price.
Yeah.
So maybe don't look at making it a global company instantly, because you're not going to get 100% of the people on board, because people don't care enough about it.
Absolutely.
But the 10% that do care are the people who, you know, will come out and will help your business grow. And that's the people you need to look at.
Right. Cool.
What do you think?
What
have
about?
Have you ever had limiting belief about a business that you were going to start, or an idea that you had and thought, no, there's no business in it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've started enough, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But most of them kind of start like that. Anyway, with Jobs in Kent, it was a stupid idea in the first place because nobody had access to the internet. So basically, I'm trying to sell an internet service when the vast majority of people didn't even know what the internet was, let alone have access to it. So in technology, there's a concept called a killer app, and a killer app. So, for instance, the whole personal computer revolution only took off when there was a killer app. So there'd been hobbyist computers around for 20 years and people didn't buy them unless you were an electronics buff and you like to, you know, build things out of electronics and play games. Apple produced the Apple One and then the Apple Two, and again it was still just a hobbyist thing. until a killer app came along, and a killer app was a thing called VisiCalc. And VisiCalc was the world's first spreadsheet. And all of a sudden, there was a reason for everybody to own a PC. Yeah. So the way I looked at it was that job sites would become a bit of a killer app for the internet. Yeah, because otherwise, most of the stuff on the internet at that time was just for technical geeks. And as most people aren't technical geeks, they weren't interested. What you needed was something that people wanted to buy into anyway. But of course, when you're trying to do something that nobody's done and nobody understands, it's quite daunting. Mm. And you have to go. I've told the story a number of times. It took me 4 years to make my first 25 quid. At jobs in Kent.
So did you see your business as building a legacy for a couple of years' time, or literally you were just all in, that was it, and had nothing else to do?
That's a good question. I don't, you know that I'm not a goal setter, and I don't believe in grand plans and visions and all the rest of it. I just do stuff and see what happens. And I guess what I did is I came up with the idea of doing what I wanted to do. And I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that I invented this, because I certainly didn't, because there were already internet sites about. What I did is I changed slightly the emphasis. Yeah, so before me, everybody thought about building global job portals.
Yep.
There was a company called Stepstone, and they built a worldwide portal. And I'm just thinking, that's daft. How many people work worldwide? You know, 99% of people want to work within 10 miles of where they live. Why would you want to know about jobs in Melbourne if you live in Maidstone? You wouldn't. So that was what brought Jobs in Kent about. I just did it a bit like the radio station, because it was there and I could do it.
And that's a good thing as well, though, because I think the perception that you got straight away is that, you know, before you made your first £25, it was a few years. But the first job application and my CV that I put out after I left my first role was through Jobs in Kent. But it's that perception, because I would look online before I ever looked at a recruitment firm where I had to go and sit for a 7 day interview or whatever it was, that process.
Yeah.
Because it's quick, and I think that's, you know, that hate the term, but millennial. The millennial view is that it's about speed, and the most important thing for business owners is time.
Yeah.
And if you can provide that time, then no matter what it is, I think that's kind of that sweet spot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, just thinking about most of the other things that I've started, I think to some extent this is just me, because I'm the way I am. I've got some businesses that I'm really not sure how I'm still in business with them. You know, they're so marginal that you think, I don't know. And I go, but I like doing it, so I'll carry on doing it until it hurts. If it started to hurt, then I'd stop doing it. But, you know, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't do a lot.
But 4 years is a long time to invest in something before it gives you any return on investment.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is one of the issues with starting a business. Yeah. And this is a millennial thing, is that everybody wants instant success.
Yep.
Yeah. And they hear so many stories that purport to be about instant success. It isn't true in the most part. You know, the actual process of getting something up and running is never really instant. A lot of people retrofit that to go, you know, we did this, we did that, we cut out all the boring bit in between, and then we were made £1 million. Most things don't actually work like that. It's a real shame, because I wanted to talk, this is one of the massive things I wanted to talk to Kevin about, is how you start something like Checkatrade. Yeah, because starting online things like job sites or car sites or anything else, you've got a website and you've got no users and no adverts.
Yeah.
How do you start? That's the problem. That's the issue. And then, so when we launched Jobs in Kent, there was nobody else to even steal the jobs off of. Now, when you start something like that, you steal everyone else's jobs or everyone else's cars or whatever. But there was nothing to steal from. You know, everything was in the newspapers. So if we wanted it, we had to copy it out of the newspapers. So we always knew it was going to be a slow burn, because there was no other way to do it. So the fact was, I was doing something else to earn a living whilst we were doing that. Yeah, so I was still working as a public speaker and as a management consultant whilst we were trying to get Jobs in Kent up and running. And it was only when we started to earn money that I stopped doing that other stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part as well. So whether you call it brave or stupid, is always the number one kind of differentiation there. But, you know, I was the other side where I just decided to go for it. But I think a lot of people, and especially when you're building something like that, building for the future, and like you said, until that killer app comes, you look at things like Alexa and the Google Home and the Apple HomePod, you know, they're waiting for that killer app that everybody needs one. And I think this it's a nice thing to have at the moment, and I think that businesses can utilize it, but for the most part, they are still waiting for that reason why you wake up and talk to it every morning.
Oh, I tell you, I'm already working on that. I'm already working on that. Because I want it in my business. I want you to be able to go, you know, Alexa, no, bird in the bike, the conversation. It takes a long time to actually come into it.
Yes.
But I think, again, it comes down to that, what we said, Ben. It's speed. It's all about speed.
Yes.
Or, actually, can you go through all my contacts and see what they say about this, this, this? But we're not getting it yet.
Yeah.
And exactly. that's what it's all about. Go on.
Well, luckily, we're joined by Kevin Byrne. Hello, great. Kevin.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in and joining us. We are pleased. Funny enough, I was just saying, just as you called, how much I wanted to talk to you because we were having a discussion in the studio about startup businesses and how you get started with internet-based businesses, which is what my background is as well. And I was the other guys in the studio were asking me how I got started. But I said, I really wanted to talk to you about how you got started. So it's a real pleasure to welcome to the Business Bunker Show Mr. Kevin Byrne, who's the founder of Checkatrade. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. If you don't mind, can you take us back to what really inspired you to come up with the idea of Checkatrade in the first place?
Of course. Well, it's going back a long time. I was a young man and I had some hair.
I know the feeling.
Well, it started actually a long, long time before it was called Checkatrade. When my children started to appear on the scene, my wife actually said to me, "Kev, our carpets are filthy." So I got a carpet cleaner around. It was like, what? I can't afford that. And I actually ended up borrowing 250 quid off my mum, and I bought a carpet cleaning machine and started cleaning carpets.
Well, okay.
But then it was like, where do I advertise? So as a young man at the time, I was a graphic designer working for a local printer. So I had some skills in developing sort of leaflets and stuff. So I actually went to some friends of mine who were plumbers and builders, and I said, "Look, if we all put 20 quid in a pot, I'll get some leaflets printed and get them distributed locally, and you can distribute them around your houses where you live, and we'll see whether that develops anything." And that developed into what I call the local business directory, right. And it ended up being one of those little A5 books that comes through everyone's door now. But I'm pretty sure I was one of the first in the UK to develop one of those. But that's sort of got me used to talking to tradesmen and selling advertising space.
Right.
So that was 27 years ago.
Well, okay. Right, cool. Yeah.
But that's not what instigated Checkatrade. What instigated Checkatrade was I've been producing this little book for a long time, and a tornado went through my hometown.
Wow.
And that was quite rare for a tornado to actually cause damage. It caused £10 million worth of damage. And it wasn't a light bulb moment for me. It was something that grew on me as an idea over a period of time. But what I couldn't come to grips with was if someone's got some damage to their home or just needed it repaired or improved, a tradesman can come into your home, and they can rip you off, they can take your life savings and leave your house in a mess.
Yep.
And get away with it. And yet, if I went down to Sainsbury's and walked out with a bottle of wine, I'd get arrested.
Yeah, sure.
If I didn't pay for it, of course.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get my head around that. So I started to look at the guilds and the federations, local government, central government, to see whether there was anything out there at all that would protect consumers from rogue trades. And apart from one of the roofing federations at the time, which I thought, oh, they're actually doing something, I just couldn't see anything. So tentatively, I started to pick the phone up, and I phoned a few of the tradesmen that I knew just with an idea, saying, look, I'm going to be calling this the phone box. That was the original concept.
Right, okay, cool.
I'm looking for one plumber, one electrician, one builder, and if you can give me some qualifications, letters from your previous customers, and your insurance documents, we'll say that these are trades that have been recommended by local people.
Mm.
And that's how it started.
Well,
19 years ago.
Wow, and presumably you started that in your local area just with local people.
Yeah, I had no money. Mm. It was before the internet. This was 1998.
Right.
So it was purely a print-based product at that point. It was a directory that went through people's doors.
Yeah.
You're dead right. It was local to me. It was Chichester.
Right.
And we printed, I think, we didn't call it the phone box, although that was the initial idea. The first name of the first product went through people's doors. It was called Scout.
Okay.
Meaning we'd scouted out and looked around and tried to find the best trades.
Right, okay, cool. So that kind of preempts the question I was going to ask you, because I'm going to know the answer now, because you started off with a hard copy thing. We were talking just before you called in about this, and the guys in the studio were asking. I run a business called Jobs in Kent, which is a recruitment portal, and we put the first portal up 20 years ago. And they were just asking me how I started, and I said, well, it was really difficult then because nobody had heard of the internet, and certainly nobody had access to it. Starting an online business of that kind is incredibly difficult because you have no customers and you have no audience, and you've got to build those two. But I guess with you were able to transfer some of that from your printed things into your first websites.
Well, my first website was literally a TIFF of one of the printed directories.
Right, okay.
there was no interaction. There was no background office to it at all. Mm. It was just a photograph of, because I was a graphic designer, I could turn it into a PDF and simply just post it on a website.
Mm.
Not really realizing where the website would really kick in, but I thought, wow, you know, as a graphic designer, I did a few of the very, very first websites that were out there.
Mm.
So that was my first step myself into it, not really realizing how big it would become.
Right.
I think one of the big things that happened to me was that as time went by, and this was quite early on, this is around about the year 2000, when the internet was around, but again, people didn't really understand it, or the access to it was limited and it was really slow. I was asking tradesmen for recommendations from previous customers.
Right.
And then it just dawned on me, what if I could get recommendations on an ongoing basis and use this internet for it?
Hmm.
That sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? So what do you do with an idea? You see if someone else is doing it so you can copy it.
Right.
So I went, and this is before TripAdvisor, before Google, before all the major brands that are out there that do reviews. And I couldn't find anything to copy. There was nothing. So if I have got a claim to fame, and I'll stop saying it if someone proves me wrong, I think I was the first in the world to do online reviews.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. I'm sure you were. In doing a bit of background research, I was looking at that and trying to find out where the first idea for that came from. And I would pretty much concur. I think you're about the first into it, for sure. Yeah. And certainly in any meaningful way, even if someone was messing about locally somewhere, nobody knows about it. So it's fantastic. And of course, what you've done there is created, well, I don't know how to term it really. The entire world works on recommendations and reviews these days. We don't do anything, or I certainly don't do anything without checking a review first. I won't book a restaurant. I won't book a hotel. I won't go on holiday. I won't get an electrician. I won't do anything without checking.
I know there was a government commission that put something out about 2 years ago. I can't remember what it was called now, but it was, they came back with a figure that said 54% actively use online reviews to make a decision when using a service or buying a product.
Yeah.
And I'm sure just in 2 years, that 54% must have gone up quite dramatically.
I actually looked at the numbers the other day, and I'm trying to remember what they were, and I think, I might be wrong, but I think it was somewhere near a 71% now.
I would probably say that's a good guess.
Yeah, which wouldn't surprise me, because everybody you talk to says, I checked it on there, or I reviewed it on there, or I looked on there, or I was going to go here, but I didn't when I read the reviews or whatever. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least. Well, I mean, that's amazing. And funnily enough, the conversation we were having was about starting, but we've got a young entrepreneur with us as our next guest on, Ben, and we were talking to Ben in the studio about this kind of thing. And Bird, who's my co-host here, was asking about, you know, when you start a business, do you start with a goal? Do you know what your end is and all the rest of it? And for me, I certainly don't. I own 10 businesses, and I've just got this idiot view of just starting businesses for the hell of it. And for me, I just do stuff because it looks interesting and I see where it goes. And if it doesn't go anywhere, then I stop doing it. If it does, I keep going with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you will talk to some people that will say that's the right way. You'll get to someone else that says you've got to focus on one thing, get a business plan, lay everything out, analyze what you want to achieve in what time period and what sacrifices you prepare to make, and go and study your competition and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's whatever works for you.
So what camp do you fall into, Kevin?
Oh, I hate business plans.
Yeah, me too.
I hate business plans.
Yeah.
I just want to pick up the phone and get on with it.
Exactly, yeah.
And to me, you know, that's, you know, there will be some people out there that will say, well, that's very foolish. You could be wasting your time. And I agree with them. I do. You can't disagree that a business plan isn't a good idea. Of course it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I just don't like them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
And some people will have a business plan that looks forward to 5-6 years.
Mm.
Certainly in the first 10 years of trying to build Checkatrade, there was no business plan.
Sure.
It was what needs to be done, put the fires out, do what's ever necessary, with a view that we want to just build it.
Mm.
And it was all hands to the deck, all hands on pumps. The few members of staff I had, they were absolutely behind me, and they were excited to come to work. They knew this was something that the consumer needed and the trades needed. And it was very, very exciting.
Mm, absolutely.
Today, you know, I've sold Checkatrade now. I sold it last year.
Mm.
But the last 5 years of running Checkatrade, we absolutely had to have a business plan.
Right, yeah.
Absolutely. There's no way, you know, when you start to employ 200, 300 people, it becomes very negligent
yeah.
for you not to have that. But I would never look further than 6 months.
Right, yeah.
Kevin, we get loads of people on Twitter giving us questions and answers and asking about business. And somebody, Neville Gaunt, has asked us, can you ask Kevin who came up with the Checkatrade jingle in the ad?
Is that the one that's the William Tell Overture?
Yes.
Or for those of us of a certain age, the Lone Ranger theme tune?
Yeah. Because it's genius, isn't it? Because every time I want to say it, I have to sing it.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant.
It was a mixture of myself and Bridget Barnes. Sadly, Bridget passed away last year.
Oh,
but Bridget worked for me for 14 years.
Mm.
And she was my right arm when it came to marketing. And she was the moral compass of the things that I put in place. She would come to me and she said, Kev, are you sure that's the right thing to do? And I said, you know what, Bridget, you're right. We shouldn't be doing that.
Mm.
Let's change. She was a phenomenal lady. And between the two of us, I think it was probably 60% her and 40% me. But I'm going back about 16 years.
Right, okay.
Wow.
As to when that, so it's difficult to really pin it. But I think I would probably say Bridget had a little bit more say than it than I did. But it was a combination of the two of us.
It's brilliant. It's what we in the radio business call an earworm. Because it's annoying. But you can't escape it, and you sing it all the time.
The hours of TalkSport that I've listened to, and the Checkatrade jingle coming up every time.
Yeah.
And also, Kevin, what are you doing now then? So are you just retired? What are you doing?
I'm still on the board of Checkatrade. Mm. They asked me to stay on as a non-exec and give my advice and my opinion on things, which is great.
Mm.
So although they might not listen to everything that I say, I do have a voice, and the new owners, you know, are tentative and understanding that, you know, you've got to listen to the founder.
Mm.
But apart from that, that doesn't take much of my time up. I'm doing a number of things. For many years, I have enjoyed dabbling in property.
Right.
So I've now created a development company where we've got quite a few houses on the go. We've got some new builds, some refurbishments going on.
Right.
I'm also feeling I'm like someone off Dragon's Den. People are pitching to me constantly.
Right.
Of course they are.
And it's very, very interesting. There's a couple out there that I'm looking like I'm going to invest in.
Okay. Good.
Is that something you thought you'd end up in, Kevin? You know, when you first started Checkatrade, look into now being a quote-unquote angel investor into businesses.
Not in a million years, no. I just wanted to solve the road trade problem.
Mm.
I often thought that I should rename Checkatrade, and it should have been called goodenoughformymum.com. because that really does focus you as to who you let on board.
Ben's writing a plan at the moment, yeah, Kevin. He's going to pitch you. It's good enough for my mum.com, I think.
But that really does focus you. When you start thinking, when my mum, sadly again, my mum passed away last year, but when my mum was with us and she was saying, Kev, who should I have in to rebuild my conservatory? Let's have a look, mum. and that really does make you start thinking about the quality of the trades. And when I left Checkatrade, and I'm sure all of these things are still in place, there was 18 considerations.
Right.
And out of those 18, 13 were actual checks before a trade. And if I ever failed in Checkatrade, it was that.
Right.
I didn't get that message across.
Right. How robust the checking was.
How robust, yeah. I don't think I successfully got that message across.
Right.
I mean, no one put the checks in place that we did.
Right.
We knew that if there was a dodgy trade out there, the people that would know who the dodgy trades were the actual trades themselves,
yep.
The other trades.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we had something in place for our existing members to blow the whistle, but they could do that completely 100% anonymously.
Right.
And if that one trade blew the whistle on another, that would instigate a whole new, fresh level of vetting that we would put on that particular trade.
Hmm.
And sometimes we would expose things that we didn't see the first time around, but sometimes we didn't see anything, and it was just one trade trying to badmouth another one off.
I was going to say, with that, did you ever come across people that were just kind of trying to put their competition out of business? Yeah.
Occasionally, you'd have someone. I would imagine it happens on TripAdvisor a lot, where one local restaurant will go and badmouth another.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I always had a saying on the internet, and this was basically what I used to say: I will never get into a position where I will allow anybody to say anything about anybody else without justification or proof.
Mm. Absolutely.
And that's exactly what the internet is today.
Mm.
Yep.
There are some reviews out there that will instantly post a job.
Mm.
Sorry, will instantly post a review.
Yep.
They don't know who the reviewer is, and they don't know whether it's true or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I sold Checkatrade in November last year, every single feedback that came in, we called the consumer.
Right.
54,000 phone calls a month.
Wow.
Absolutely immense.
Right.
And we would have a way of asking the questions with the consumers to try and, you know, the best we can, that this was a genuine customer with a genuine review.
Yeah.
And we did find trades that falsified their reviews and we kicked them off.
Right.
It's like testimonials as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You see so many people writing testimonials on their websites, and actually, is that a selling point? And is it real?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And again, if there's one aspect to Checkatrade I think I failed in, is getting that message over to the consumer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That these are, and you know, as with all business, is, and with the internet being what it's like, where anybody can say what they want about anyone.
Mm.
You know, we would get things said about us that just wasn't true.
Yep.
Oh, Checkatrade only posted good reviews. It was just rubbish.
Yeah.
It was rubbish, you know.
Mm.
We would post a bad review. We would.
Yeah.
But there would only be one bad review in every 200 jobs.
Right.
So you've got to really look to find them.
Yeah. And surely that's the point, isn't it? The whole point of this is to stop people behaving badly because they know they're going to get reviewed badly.
Absolutely. And I would, you know, the way it works is this. If a tradesman gets a bad review on Checkatrade, his phone won't ring for a month.
Yep.
So what are they going to do? They're going to make sure they do a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's almost self-policing, although it's not, but you could argue that there's an element of it that's self-policing.
Absolutely.
When someone's on Checkatrade, they can't afford to do a bad job.
Yep.
Because they know we're going to publish it, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, without being funny, I have a reasonably substantial following on Twitter. Even with big corporates that annoy me, if they annoy me with bad service, I'll put it on Twitter. And there's nothing they can do about it. They have to respond. Whereas in the old days, you could ring a big corporate, and by the time you got through all their IVR boxes and the rest of it, you'd lost the will to live. Nowadays, they can't, you know, more and more companies can't afford to give bad service because it becomes too evident too quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
And that is entirely down to you and your invention, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think that's following on from what Paul just said, Kev. You know, we're talking about something that you have done very well. You know, you spoke about the failings and what you've been able to put across. But what you've done very well is take the anonymity out of, you know, the bad review, like TripAdvisor, where, you know...
It could be anyone.
Yeah, it could be absolutely anybody, and the company gets very defensive about it. But, you know, you take that anonymity away, and Checkatrade effectively built that great environment for good business people to continue. And you're doing good business.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Kevin, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Now, I do know that you're going to be doing a keynote speech at the Southeast Construction Expo in September at Ardingly. Is that not so?
It's true.
Cool. And what are you going to be talking to us about there?
I don't know, really. They've basically said to me, Kev, you can talk about whatever you like. You know, some people like to hear the Checkatrade story on how I started it and how I developed it and the issues, etc.
Yeah.
I sometimes talk about what it takes to build a team.
Yep.
If you haven't got a team, you've got nothing.
Yep.
No one achieves anything extraordinary on their own. They've got to have a team behind them that backs their vision.
Absolutely.
I sometimes talk about expectations. You're only ever going to achieve what you expect to achieve, and if you expect to achieve nothing, that's what you'll achieve.
Yeah, true.
So I sometimes talk about expectations. I don't know. I generally sit there and engage. I talk to a few people beforehand and see where people is. I try and gauge where people are in their businesses and tailor it to that.
Fantastic. Well, we're really looking forward to that, Kevin. We'll all be there, and we're looking forward to hearing you live at the Southeast Construction Expo. For the moment, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Do enjoy the rest of your day, and we look forward to seeing you in Ardingly.
Anytime, Paul. Just if you want me to come back on, talk about some specific business, I'll be happy to do it.
That would be wonderful, and we'll certainly try and set that up, because we'd love to hear from you some more. Kevin, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Been a pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy your day.
And you.
Cheers now.
And you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Kevin Byrne there, founder of Checkatrade. What a nice chap.
He's just got this... He's very gracious and he's very calm.
Yeah.
And you just want to hear him. You don't. We don't even want to ask questions. We just want to
hear him speak.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's what I love about him.
I'm going to get him back on without a doubt.
I want him in the studio.
Yeah, I want him in the studio.
I want him as a tangible person.
Get him here for 2 hours and get him to enlighten us all.
And I think he teaches us something as well. He makes you listen.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't want to talk. I don't want to ask questions. Yeah. Just let me hear you.
And I think sometimes people can try and put over this really energetic persona to try and make people listen. Whereas I think what he does brilliantly is that it's calm, it's collected, and it is humble, talking about, you know, he's so Checkatrade, which is a big company.
Yeah.
But still having that humbleness to be able to tell that story in a really unique way.
And that's the mark of someone really special, is that they can just tell you stories.
Yeah.
And you want to listen. Basically, they're not trying to sell you anything. They're not trying to persuade you to do anything. You know, they're just telling you something, and you go, wow, I want to listen to this because this is interesting.
And each little story has a model that you can implement yourself or that you could think, what I love, and I think it's very clear to hear from him, is that the blood that runs through the company is that, well, would you allow this to happen to your family?
Yeah.
Because there is no greater love than protecting the ones that we love. So family's first.
Exactly. But the vast majority of successful businesses start off satisfying a problem that somebody has.
Yes.
Mm. Normally you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's normally something that affects you or your family, and you go, how can we solve that? I don't like that. What can we do about it?
But he did something very unique in business. He gave us what we needed, not what we wanted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Usually businesses, I'll give you what you want because you'll spend the money on what you want.
Yeah, they pander to that.
Yeah, yeah, so. And then give you what you need.
But, if you think about it, though, prior to Kevin's development of that, nobody walked around going, do you know what, I wish there was a comparison check-in website where I could check traders.
No, you just do it on...
People just moaned.
Rogue
traders, bloody rogue traders. If I get one, I'll report them to Trading Standards and they'll do nothing and then I've lost my money. And they even used to have television programs about it where they look at rogue traders after they'd done it. But nobody was clamouring for a site or a system which checked anybody.
No.
Yeah? So he's brilliant invention. And the thing about it is... It wasn't just a single invention for his site, although it was, and he built a brilliant company on the back of it. It actually changed, and this isn't too big a thing on it, it actually changed society. It radically changed society because there's very few things we will do now without checking first. Yep. And that has imposed on everything, which is what I was trying to waffle about with big corporates. Even they are being dragged into this now. They can't get away with what they used to do. Big corporates used to get away with poor customer service by blanking you out, yeah? By making it so difficult to talk to anybody there. Computer saying, no, sorry, lost the call, somebody will get back to you and do it. All that. You can't get away with it now. With social media and review sites and all the rest of it, you're just going to get slated. And the thing is, because it's a public thing, so many people can join in, yeah? So I post something on Twitter to one of my favourite telecoms companies, yeah, and telling them how bad they are. And within 10 minutes, 50 people have all agreed, and started telling their own stories. And that's just such bad publicity for a corporate. They have to take it offline straight away. So they have to respond straight away. What they're going to have to learn eventually is they've got to up their customer service because their customer service is not good enough. And for years, they've got away with it because they were so big.
But you could reverse engineer that as well. It's the greatest way to get feedback. It's the greatest way to improve your service. Mm. And then do you listen to that feedback? Is it real?
I think that's the biggest question is how many businesses actually look at that as feedback because it's a growth opportunity, right? So the second that somebody gives you a negative review on social media, if you do it right, then you should react and go, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Within reason. Yeah. And why? What can we do to help?
I think... In terms of any business, no matter what it is, not just trades, although they had the worst reputation, but funnily enough, on Amanda's show last week, she had Aaron Taylor on, and we were talking exactly about this with web designers. Yeah. How do you know what you're getting? You don't know anything about the people that are designing your website. You don't know whether you're getting value for money. You don't know anything because it's outside your technical expertise. And it was always the same with cars as well.
I was just going to say cars.
Yeah. You take your car to a garage and they go, your okie cokie's falling off. You watch it and you go, really? Is that expensive? Oh, I could probably do it for 500 quid. You've got no idea. You could just run out of petrol. If you don't know about cars, you don't know. So that's always been the human condition. You were reliant on someone that set themselves up as an expert, and you had
business, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the end of it,
you had no comeback to it. But what Kevin has changed radically is there's now this, and he was right. I think it's almost a self-policing mechanism that says, because there are very few people about that are really rogue traders. What there are lazy people, slapdash people, and people in a hurry.
Yep.
Tradespeople tend to be the worst at that because they don't plan their jobs properly. So they come in, get hassle from the customer because they promised to come and, unblock your toilet 3 weeks ago and they haven't come in. They rush in, rush out and send you the bill and it hasn't worked properly. I don't think it's because they're particularly bad people or were trying to rip you off. They're just really badly organised and haven't done the job properly. So it's that it's curing. You're always going to have criminals in a society. You're always going to have scammers and a few people that try to rip you off. There's, you can't eradicate it. Yeah. What it is curing are slapdash jobs. And people now thinking, do you know what? If I do a slapdash job on this, I ain't going to work again for months, as Kevin said. Yeah. So I need to up my game here. And that's great. I think that's brilliant. Good.
Good.
What a brilliant interview.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like I said, I just love it when I don't even have to ask. You just let it flow.
Yeah. No, really brilliant. Really cool. Yeah. And I'm going to take him up on his offer. I'm going to get him here. I really am.
We want him in the studio, though.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
We don't want him on the phone again.
No, I want him in the studio.
Yeah, he'll love it. He'll have a great experience.
Yeah.
I have to be on.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. You can go and get him. He's from your part of the world.
No, he's not.
He's from Portsmouth.
He's nowhere near where I'm from.
Oh, no.
What's wrong with you people?
He's half the way there.
It's Pompey. It's nowhere near where I'm from.
All sounds the same to us.
Yeah. Don't join in with him, Ben.
Okay. I'll stay out. Don't take sides, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're on a loser there if you join in with me. Cool. Cool. Well, it's almost that time to join the newsroom.
Excellent.
So I think we'll probably go over to the newsroom. And then when we come back, we are indeed going to talk to Ben, which is going to be great. So we're really looking forward to that. But let's join the newsroom for the moment.
On the Hour, Channel Radio News Update.